Hello everyone, you are listening to the Vegan Report podcast. My name is Ryan, and today we address the free speech threats animal rights activists face every day. From social media censorship and reputational harm to detention, we will explore the risks of talking for animals in a world where animal exploitation is the norm. To discuss this topic, I have with me Dr. Firas Harsini and Madeline Krasno, two targets of free speech attacks. Dr. Firas is the founder and CEO of Allied Scholars for Animal Protection, ASAP, a nonprofit which mentors and supports animal advocates. He's also a cultivated meat bioprocessing senior scientist at the Good Food Institute. Madeline is a returning guest of the show. She is the co-founder and executive director of Justify, a nonprofit dedicated to advancing science without human or animal suffering. Justify provides a supportive space for current and former lab workers to share their stories and aims to shine a light on the realities of animal research. I was thinking about free speech in my own personal life, and we discussed how, you know, I was born in North Africa, and how in my origin country, you know, there is no free speech. There are blasphemy laws, and there is no, and that's the most important point, I think, there is no culture of free speech. You're not supposed to say certain things, and saying whatever you want is just not socially acceptable. And I think that the experience of, you know, immigrating to a country where you have that freedom gave me the expectation, I feel like, and maybe expectation is the wrong word, but I felt like a duty to use that right. You know, since I gained that right, I should be using it and defending it, since I know firsthand what it means not to have it. And as I was thinking about that, I realized, yeah, I launched a podcast. Maybe that's a topic that is more important than I realized for me, for my personal life, you know, just from a subconscious level. But what about you? Did you ever think about free speech before having your misadventure with it? Did you ever think about the value of free speech in society and what it meant to live in a country, democratic country, where you have that right? Who wants to answer the question first?
I can start. So, you know, that's an interesting, it's interesting to hear your reflection and to think about the fact that I honestly, you know, I know that free speech came up in my education. But I don't think I spent a lot of time really thinking about what it means, how it plays out. I didn't even necessarily think about what it meant when it was, when I felt that my free speech rights were being violated. When I was trying to talk about my experience working in the primate lab, I think that my experience working in a primate lab, especially as someone who was like very, I was a pretty shy individual. Public speaking was a terrifying thought to me. I obeyed authority. I respected authority. I assumed that those in charge knew the most. They, you know, they're the ones to turn to. And all of this to say, like, I realized that being in that environment sort of taught me to not so much talk, even though, like, in theory, I should have been able to like express concerns. And so, like, after leaving the lab, after being done in that environment and kind of starting to experience situations where I would, like, see injustice taking place, and sort of starting to speak up about it, I got more confident, and I started to just kind of explore what this meant, this idea that I should be able to actually speak out. Because I think even though it's like something that is supposed to be a right for us here in this country, there's still social norms, and that can dictate a lot of what people do end up talking about and how that speech is, construed.
What you said really resonates with me. I'm originally from Iran, and I think my introduction to speaking up was when I was a part of some like protests, and we saw how we got tear gassed and people got beaten up for just saying words. And I don't ever see how saying things with your mouth should lead to you losing your life. And and that goes to human rights, women having have to wear hijab, me being gay and not even being able to question it, because not only I didn't have freedom of speech, but also like internet was filtered. And then like questioning religion was another thing, and like so many red lines that you cannot even touch or say anything about, and the consequences would be you literally going to jail and losing your life over it. And so I think when I look at my life, it's like you think about how I plotted, it's like having nothing, and then suddenly when you come to the US, you're like, oh, this is amazing. And then you realize that there are so many things wrong with this country as well. But I think I always keep in mind where I came from and, where we are in the US or in the Western world, at least, which is certainly a lot better than perhaps Iran, Islamic countries, Africa. But I also started to discover a lot of other problems even here. For instance, my colleague got arrested over showing footage of factory farms in public property. Then you have ag gag laws that try to criminalize just whistleblowers from just showing the cruelty in animal farms. And then with my organization, Allied Scholars for Animal Protection, part of what we do is to just be in universities and advocate for animals. And then we see how close we get to just getting canceled just because the administration doesn't like what we do. They constantly issue letters just saying that your speech made students uncomfortable, therefore you're canceled and you're getting these warnings. And I see that, and as someone who has lived the other side, and I know how it's like not to have free speech, I'm just very worried about losing all these. I think we are stepping back, or going backwards in terms of like free speech in this country. And if we don't protect it, it's not given. It's really clear to me that free speech is not a given right. It's something that you have to fight for it. And it's tough because you have to be ready to hear things that you don't like. That's a whole idea behind free speech, to be open to things that you're not agreeing with. But I see that as a whole, we are, going in the wrong direction, I think, especially in college campuses, when it comes to animal testing, and so many other things. And even in the political environment, I think like the second that I don't agree with your political point of view, then suddenly you're sexist, racist, homophobic, all those labels that we just tell each other, because we are not willing to hear each other out and put each other in each other's shoes for a second, and be able to disagree in a civilized manner. And what we do is we cancel, we censor information and all that. But I hear you, and it's really interesting to me that you had the same experience from Africa as well. But I feel it when you don't have those rights, and then you suddenly have. then you feel like you have that responsibility to use it, which is why I keep telling my American and European friends that you have this voice, you have this freedom of speech, and with all its problems, you still can say anything you want about the president of the United States and don't feel like you're going to go to jail. And I don't think people understand how great that is. You can say anything about religion, anything about really anything without like thinking that you're going to lose your life over it. And so now that you have that freedom, I think we do have that responsibility to speak up for other beings who don't have that opportunity.
Yes, I think that we should make a distinction between, again, the culture of free speech, the more, social aspect of it, and then the more, establishment free speech, so legal free speech. So when you talk about AGAG laws, that's an attack on free speech from the institutions. And then what are examples of maybe attacks on free speech, but from the social side of it, if we focus on animal rights? Maddie?
I mean, I guess what comes to mind is just the fact that, we are bombarded in every single way in society to use animals in some way, whether it's for entertainment, for resources, for food, for testing, and that is so normalized. And so the second that you speak up and say, hey, like maybe we need to rethink this, it's suddenly an attack. It's viewed as you are attacking the other person. And don't get me wrong, sometimes the way people talk to each other can very much end up being an attack. But I think that even if you're kind of addressing it in a more neutral or personal matter, like, this is my experience and this is what led me to, to stop eating animals or whatever have you, it still becomes like personal to the other person or these other individuals, the community that's not sort of on board. And then, it's pretty quickly seen as sort of like you are infringing on my space, on what I want to be doing, even if what we're talking about has its own victims. So that's kind of what I start to think about when I think about sort of what happens when people start talking about the treatment of animals in our society. It's just, it's so normalized to use them simply because we can. And the very thought of sort of changing that erupts this defense because of that normalcy.
Dr. Faraz, anything?
Yeah, I think when it comes to animals, I remember when I was taking a biomedical ethics class, and then they were showing us the animal facility. Before that, they told us you can't record. And I went to a public university, so they said you have to turn off your phones, no photography or anything. And then I raised my hand and I said, why not? And then they said, we just don't want the footage out. I was like, why not? And then they said, because some people get emotional or whatever. And I said, well, if we are a publicly funded university and we are doing all these things with people's tax money, isn't it their basic right to see what happens with their taxes? And they just shut me off and we went to animal facility. So and yeah, I think the animal industry, whether it's food or animal experimentation, they really use these laws trying to protect themselves. And by blocking free speech, I mean, Maddie's case is just a great example of how they were censoring her specifically, like, no voice for you. You cannot talk about this. But yeah, I think, AGAG laws and laws against animal testing, like showing the footage and recording these facilities. Just like clear example of how you're using laws to censor freedom of speech, I guess.
Yes. Maddie, yes, I think you're right that we are on the margins of things. Sometimes I speak out and I feel like I'm the crazy one. Okay, let's get to what happened to you. So can you please bring us to that moment when your free speech right was violated? And I want to know, from the beginning, like how did they started, and did you expect that you're going to, face that wall? And what was your reaction? Dr. Faraz, would you like to start this time?
Sure. I mean, there's been so many incidences. I don't know which one to start with, but the big one about animal rights and most recent one, I guess, is an incident in Discovery Green in Houston, which is a park that is open to public. It's a public park funded by, taxpayer money, but it's operated by private management. So that's why it was a little, confusing for park management because they, and what we were doing, we were basically doing a cube of truth. So we were showing standard and legal practices in animal farms in this public park. And we were not blocking the way, we were not making any noise. We're just silently and peacefully showing this footage. Did not even approach bystanders. We just stood there and showed this footage. And then we were asked to leave and we showed them the tax records. Literally, the video is there. We are showing them this is the tax. This is your own website saying that this is a public park. And they called the police and police asked us to leave. And my colleague said, "What happens? Are you threatening to arrest me? What happens if I don't leave?" And they kept saying that the park manager wants you to leave, you have to leave. And we kept saying that you as a police officer, are you asking us to leave? Because that's a different thing. And they kept saying that, no, we are not threatening you. And we said, if you threaten to arrest us, we will leave. We are not here to get arrested, but this is our right to be here. And the police said, no, we are not threatening you, but the park manager asks you to leave, so you have to leave. But they suddenly changed their mind and arrested my colleague and threatened me with arrest as well if I didn't leave. And but we were able to capture this on three cameras because we were so ready. And the charges against my colleague was they were dropped. But then we sued the park management, City of Houston, and police at Houston. So this is an ongoing case as we were speaking. But that's one example. But also another annoying thing is really just being in a lot of universities, especially like private universities, where we have to be so worried about talking about animal issues because they keep canceling us or try to cancel us by saying that, you're being offensive, somebody got upset. And knowing that they would make a difference, they would discriminate against us just because the administration doesn't like vegans or doesn't care about animals or whatever the thing is. But we know that if it comes to another group, they may be more tolerant, or think about the optics, but when it comes to animals or veganism or animal rights, they use anything in their power to really shut us down, which is really annoying.
There's a lot to go over. I have a few follow-up questions, and Maddie, don't hesitate to also ask your questions and make your comments. Okay, the first one you said, and going back to that, the big one, the lawsuit with the park staff in Houston, yes. who was the first person who came up to you and said, go away, what you're doing right now is offensive, just evacuate? Who was that? Was it a park manager?
The park has its own security people. So the security asked us to leave. But this wasn't a one-time event. We were asked to leave several times. One-time police officer, like tangled handcuff to my colleague and said, if you don't leave, I'm going to arrest you right now. So it kept happening and we were just so frustrated, which is why we decided to this time go with all the documents, record them, and if they ask us to leave, then we, you know, just leave and have it on the record. So we didn't really go to get arrested this time, but unfortunately, you know, my colleague got arrested. But yeah, it wasn't a one-time occurrence. They kept asking us, and we thought if we go prepared and show them their own website that says it's a public park, we have First Amendment rights in public property. And yeah, but you know, the manager asked us to leave, we refused, and so they called police and all that.
And
the case is actually being represented by University of Texas at Austin's law school. They have a clinic center for religious freedom. So they are representing us, as well as FIRE, which is a big organization that protects free speech.
And why did those security people and that policeman came up to you? Was it because of complaints?
Glad you asked, because he said, we just don't like what you're showing. He said, basically, we are not against your cause. We just don't like what you're showing. And he said, it's not like I'm not like against, I don't, he said something like that. I'm not against free speech. I just don't like what you're showing. And I was like, bro, that's not how it works. That's something that we say in Iran, like, you have freedom of speech, you can use it, but you may lose your life over it. So, but
you're it sounds like Madison, one of the things that they kept trying to say is, like, you know, there's other avenues, like, you don't have to be on our social media, write an op-ed. Well, I did write an op-ed and it actually was published in Madison and made its way around, which was great. But it was just like, you don't get to choose how I, you know, use my right to expressing myself. That's not how this works.
Exactly. They were very specific about, we don't like the content and we don't like the masks. They were just like, you, and the mask is like the, you know, most neutral mask. I was like, have you been in a Halloween party or something? But yeah, clearly they were like discriminating against the content. Yeah, that's a big no.
And then when you mentioned the universities, you know, in my mind, the university is where, you know, it's the bastion of free speech. That's where you practice your free speech, right? You know, you bring it to the limits. You just explore intellectually some very offensive stuff. You know, that's the time, that's the institution for that. And yet you went there and you find this hostile audience, and not necessarily the students, but the institution itself, the administrators. So has university changed? Or are we just a special case, you know, the animal rights cause?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think I can only speak to animal rights. And I think it has a lot to do with universities. Some universities are better, some are worse. FIRE, this organization, actually ranks universities based on free speech. But I think it has something to do with how they have a certain point of view, and anything outside of that box would be shut down. So it's probably more than animal rights, and that's just one of them. Animal rights just tend to be always outside of the box, no matter, because most people are not vegans, it's always outside of the box of everybody. But yes, some universities are great and some are horrible. Like, Harvard is notorious for lack of free speech, and yeah, and I think there is that, and then there are regulations and framework how student organizations can function. It's so vague, and the laws are written such that it's not objective. It's literally, it depends on the guys who's like applying these rules, and they can selectively decide that they can apply it to you and not to someone else.
Crazy. The other thing is that universities, when I think of them, I think of the left, and I feel like they should be more receptive to the vegan message than the right. Okay, Maddie, you're the expert in that field. You're the one who had, this huge lawsuit thing with related to university. So tell us about your story of attack on your free speech right.
Yeah. So I studied as an undergrad at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. I graduated in 2013, so over a decade ago now. And when I was there, I was studying zoology and child development, and I had decided to apply to be a student caretaker at one of the primate labs on campus because I was passionate about primate conservation, and I had this dream of going and working alongside Jane Goodall, or doing work similar to what she did. And I knew very little about animal testing at the time. I mean, I think one of the reasons is that, social media was not very big back then. There wasn't like the information wasn't even as accessible as it is now. And even so, I think it exists a lot in silos, so that's like a whole other issue. But that being said, I kind of, I had heard bits and pieces, but it was mostly like what is taking place is necessary. The animals are treated humanely. The individual who taught a course on primates, animal behavior, the primates, was actually the director of the lab that I went on to work in. And even in that class, I feel like it just built up my sort of admiration for primates without giving me true insight into an actual laboratory environment, which is why I feel like I went in wide-eyed and passionate and excited, and quickly, felt my soul deteriorating. I ended up working this part-time student role for 2 years, my last 2 years at school, 2011 to 2013. I was helping take care of 500 plus monkeys, mostly rhesus macaques, and some of the cynomolgus macaques. And that experience was severely traumatic. But because I was like so young at the time, I think I, and honestly, not well aware of mental health, like, and just what that looks like, what, I don't know, like what happens to you when you're experiencing something traumatic? I mean, I'd come from, I guess, like a pretty privileged upbringing and stuff, and I hadn't, experienced much of anything that would be, I guess, considered traumatic before then. And I loved animals. I was still at the time eating them, participating in things that now I would not, but I didn't know. I knew so little about the way that animals are treated in our society. And so this was very much an awakening in multiple ways, not just to like how we treat animals, but also what the body does to protect itself in situations that are traumatic. And in my case, I would dissociate a lot. I still to this day don't remember a lot of what happened. And these, I guess, are protective mechanisms. And I was later diagnosed with PTSD. It all kind of came together. But at the time, it was just like two different lives for me. My life that was like in the lab, and then the rest of my college experience. Being in the lab, it became pretty clear that like you kind of just respect those in charge. They're the ones who know best. I didn't know best. Something might feel icky or not, I don't know, sit right, but I just, I was this like young, impressionable person who thought like this is a really good step towards this career in primate conservation, and therefore, just don't rock the boat. I also just like, there's just this sense that don't talk about it. Don't bring up issues. Don't sound too much like an animal activist, which I wasn't at the time, but clearly that changed. So after my time in the lab, it ended because I graduated. And from there, I knew I definitely wanted to not have anything to do with animals being tested on. I decided I wanted to be in like sanctuary-based work. So a little different than conservation, but that's sort of what the path that I took. And throughout that path and that journey, I eventually started connecting with individuals who had also worked in labs. I also just was kind of meeting some people who felt safe, like safe to talk about my experiences with. And eventually that led me to starting to be like, I kind of am ready to like publicly share some of what this experience was like. And so, fast forward to years later when I started to kind of take to mostly Instagram and Facebook and was sharing some of my like recollections of my time in the lab, as well as commenting on the University of Wisconsin-Madison social media, and saying like I worked in one of their primate labs and like this was my experience, or relating like what they posted about to the plight of the animals in their labs. And I would also tag them in posts I created. It quickly, really quickly, they started untagging themselves from my posts, which, like, they're a public university. As Dr. Faraz had mentioned, like, they get, taxpayer dollars, right? Especially for this research. They have been doing research on primates for, I believe, 92 years, is what we had recently looked up. Long history. I mean, Harry Harlow, the infamous Harry Harlow, who was, taking baby monkeys away from their moms and putting them on wire moms. Like, this was the lab I worked in. Only, I mean, he had long passed, but it's like their history is infamous for this. Depending on who you ask, they seem to still celebrate him. Anyway, they're untagging me. And then I notice that they're starting to delete comments. And so at the time, I had gone to a friend, Christopher Berry, who was working at the Animal Legal Defense Fund, this animal law group. He is now with the Non-Human Animal Rights Project, Non-Human Rights Project. So I had gone to him and I was like, is this something that they're allowed to do? Like, are they, because I didn't know. I really wasn't aware of what, that I actually didn't know this whole taxpayer thing. I just knew that I was being deleted, they were untagging themselves, and that was annoying. Like, I was irritated. So anyway, he was the one who was like, they're a public university, this doesn't seem right. Brought it to Animal Legal Defense Fund, and they were able to be like, yeah, like this is a free speech lawsuit. Like we can take them on for this. And so I was like, oh, cool. That sounds great. That's the quick version. I was also terrified and sick to my stomach and, nervous about the whole thing because this is my alma mater. And I had a great education. I learned a lot there. They very much shaped who I am, and I don't, as a university, there's so much good there. But that doesn't mean that I am not allowed to criticize some of what is going on there and what needs to change. And so, I'm doing this because I also believe in this university and believe that they can do better. Anyway, we ended up filing that lawsuit back in 2021, I believe, early 2021. It is, well, let me pause for a second because there are some other important pieces to this. When we filed the lawsuit, they stopped censoring me, and they had admitted to censoring me as well. But a key piece of this is that we noticed something that I guess is like it wasn't a personal targeting, but it's something that's important to talk about because we discovered they were using blocked word lists. So they were using, on Instagram and on Facebook, you can make a list of words that, like, if someone types this word, like primate, into a comment, they will see, like, you yourself who typed it, you see your comment, and the university sees your comment, but the public doesn't. So what ended up happening is we discovered that, like, even though they had stopped censoring me as part of the lawsuit that was ongoing, I was still having some comments that weren't showing up. And I was like, why is this happening? This doesn't make sense. But it was this blocked word list that was not only effectively censoring me, but it's effectively censoring anyone who wants to talk about these issues because the list was made up almost entirely of words related to animal testing. So this was wild. And a whole other set of kind of free speech violation because this is viewpoint targeting. I mean, clearly they're trying to minimize the discussion around animal testing that is against it. So this lawsuit is actually still going on. It was initially ruled against us. All I can say about that is that I feel like this industry is powerful, and even as obvious as something like this, it's still, they still rule against us. We appealed it, and we're waiting to hear the results of that appeal. And what's important to keep in mind about that appeal is that it comes after a different lawsuit that I was a part of, where we sued the National Institute of Health, for similar viewpoint discrimination. They were using these blocked word lists to again do the same thing, stop animal advocates from basically trying to talk about the vivisection that they're very much funding in this country. And that was ruled against us in lower courts, and then we appealed and we won. And so what's important here is, we were assuming that Madison would come back and give us a ruling, especially based on that, the win with the NIH. And it hasn't come yet. So TBD, we continue to wait. But yeah, that was kind of like the whole journey up until now, is the fact that these taxpayer dollars, our money is going towards this research, and yet, the National Institute of Health itself, the one funding most of this, was trying to suppress this conversation. Not to mention, my alma mater, whose history is so deep in this research, and the irony of it, because anyone who knows the University of Wisconsin-Madison knows that sifting and winnowing is one of their like phrases. And for those of you who don't know what sifting and winnowing means, it's to like the academic pursuit of the truth. They're a school that likes to talk a lot about free speech. But again, as Dr. Faraz said, it's kind of selective, right? Like, we can support free speech, but only along these lines. And again, that's not how it works. So
How Orwellian. I mean, I think that Harvard, which was ranked as worst university in terms of free speech by FIRE, I think their slogan, or what do we call that? That Latin phrase for them is veritas, which is, again, you know, the truth, seeking the truth. Okay, so we have the NIH, we have universities, and then we also have park managers and policemen, all of them threatening in some way our free speech rights as animal rights activists. What is that? Is that a conspiration? Is it the culture? How is it so systematic?
I mean, I think you can just, you know, follow the money, right? As always, culture is a part of it. I think when you think about animal testing, there is a huge culture you're talking about. It's a very complex issue. You have professors who are pretty old, you know, and that's literally the only thing they know is to do animal testing. And they've spent 50 years of their lives at least doing that thing. That's the only thing they know. They set up the lab that way. They just don't want to think out of the box. So that's one problem. Then for them to publish, which is really what brings money to their lab, they have to show that there is quote-unquote clinical relevance. So they do animal testing even if they don't really think it's important. Then you have all these journals and NIH and FDA that require like animal testing where it's not necessary. And all this whole big, you know, interconnected mess is extremely profitable for places that breed animals or, you know, for animal testing. So there's the whole thing, which, you know, when you have money involved, then they can, you know, lobby and influence the laws and cultures and everything and prevent the truth to get out. Maddie probably knows better, but there is like a website, it's called, it's like equivalent of Animal Agriculture Alliance, like Biomedical something, what is it called?
There's two of them. I think you're talking about the Foundation for Biomedical Research, yeah, and then Understanding Animal Research.
Yeah, yeah.
It's yeah.
Just, it's like Animal Agriculture Alliance, they just like promote animal testing and all that. Yeah, another thing you can think about is cultivated meat, for instance, because I work on that. It's not directly maybe free speech, but in my head it comes pretty close to it because they're trying to not just ban consumption of it, but doing research. So they're banning universities to do research on cultivated meat, which it's, and there is no substantial like reason. There is no like, it's like a safety issue. It's not that. It's just they don't even say what it is. Yeah, again, you know, animal farming is extremely profitable. You know that cultivated meat is so small. It's not even profitable, but like it's enough for them to freak out and try to block it as best as they can, right? And you track it. It's the same thing as trying to ban plant-based foods to, you know, label their products as plant-based companies to label products as like, you know, plant-based milk or meat and all that. So it's the same game in different places. And obviously it's like, there's a lot of money, there is infrastructure that nobody wants to change. But yeah, so we do have a very hard battle in front of us, which is why it's so extremely important for every person listening to this to use their voice, your, you know, their resources, whether it's money that they can donate, whether it's their time that they can volunteer, whether it's using their freedom, you know, just talk. You have this voice box and, you know, you can talk to others. You can talk to your friends and family. And if you're a college student, do something. It's like, it's on all of us to do something. It's like, as Maddie said, it's like animal oppression is the biggest form of oppression of all time in terms of scale, in terms of magnitude. When you think about animal testing, it's pure torture. It is pure torture. You're just like, people don't even understand that these animals are injected with things or burned. I always say, think about somebody who has cancer and how much they suffer. Just imagine giving all these cancer cells on a regular basis to thousands of mice for one single experiment to cure cancer in mice. And without painkillers, right? So these animals are always living in with chronic diseases. There is a whole like knockout or knock down animals where you genetically manipulate them. So from birth, they have genetic diseases and are suffering like constant pain. And can you just imagine for a second? Imagine if you're a mouse and somebody with the weight and body size of, I don't know, 1,000 times of you grabs you and tries to gets your blood and drain your blood and take samples from you. Even if they don't actively harm you, you're just like freaking out. Just imagine if somebody that much bigger than you just grabbed you and you don't know what's happening to you. You think they're gonna kill you. Just the mental stress, being isolated, all of it is pure torture. And that's why I just think whoever is listening to this, please do something. Like, we cannot win this if we are shy, if we are not doing our best.
That's a very interesting point you're bringing up, because we can talk about exterior forces trying to censor us, but we can also be censoring ourselves. Maddie, you've said that lots of times, not wanting to rock the boat. So basically, silencing ourselves, not wanting to also feel uncomfortable, sharing the truth about things. How do we get over this? How could we get over this shyness? Should we just go and watch Dominion once a week to remind ourselves of what we're fighting for or against? How do we become comfortable speaking up for in behalf of animals?
Maddie, do you want to go?
I like, yeah, I mean, I think, so I think, okay, I have a few thoughts on this. Because I think that it's important to also acknowledge that the issues in, like, with how we treat animals, sort of like the different industries, like even though there's similarities, there's also differences, in terms of, I think, sort of how you go about changing them and how to actually advocate su more successfully. I mean, it's like there's nothing proven, right? Like we haven't had like this grand success where all of a sudden we've people are no longer slaughtering pigs. Like that hasn't happened. Sometimes labs are closed down. It's very rare, but like sometimes an experiment is stopped. But I think what is coming to mind for me is that, I especially with animal experimentation, which is where my background is, even though I don't come from the testing side of things, I come from the caregiving side of things. Through my journey of speaking out and creating this organization, Justify, I am continuing to learn the scale to which this industry operates. And Dr. Faraz kind of talked a little bit about it in the sense that there's money that's so intertwined in this. Like there's this publisher perish bias. Like there's researchers who have been doing this forever, and therefore, humans are very we like to do the same thing. Like we're kind of creatures of habit. We like to do what we're comfortable with, and so I think, we have to keep these things in mind. We have to keep in mind that it is true that animal experimentation in our history has resulted in things that have radically changed the existence positively for humans. Does that mean it was justified? I mean, we could go down a whole rabbit hole there. Does that mean that what we're doing now is justified? So I think these things need to be kept in mind when we are talking about an industry like the animal experimentation industry, because humans have this tendency to want things to be black and white, good and bad. You know, and again, I think Dr. Faraz, you kind of alluded to this at the way beginning of this conversation, where it's like someone says one thing and now you are labeled as this. And I see that a lot with the animal experimentation industry, and especially with activists. It's like you worked in a lab, so therefore you are a bad person. You know, I worked in a lab. I've been told that I deserve PTSD, that I should go die. And this is like even since dedicating my life to trying to change this. So, you know, my point here is that like we have to have an understanding of the complexities of these systems in order to go about changing them. And unfortunately, it's not enough to just say, look at how badly these animals are suffering. That is definitely a strong piece of it. I mean, that's where my heart is. But I know that that's not enough for everyone, especially because when you can't personally experience it yourself, when you're not the one seeing the animals in this lab every single day and thinking about them when you leave and when you go to sleep and when you're dreaming, it's harder to be thinking about them out of sight, out of mind, right? And oh my gosh, the propaganda around the labs is so great, right? We have all of these findings and we're curing diseases. Are we? I think these things are really important. And I think my point here is that the more we can connect with other individuals who have a really good understanding of how these things work, I think the more powerful our voices can be. And I say this again as someone who came from the animal care side of things. So I am continuing to meet with people who actually were in the industry, but on a totally different side of things, the research, right? And I'm learning that perspective and why, you know, that has continued to be the norm and how we need to change things, you know, in terms of people being consistently feeling like, you know, this is the career I want. And I have to do this in order to do that, or else I have to give up on this career. Like, how do we keep compassionate people in the field of science and not make them traumatize themselves and cause suffering to others? We need to be able to do that, and we need to understand how this all works. And so, I guess my long-winded point here is that I think part of it is doing our own research and talking to others who are all kind of working towards the same thing so that we're not operating sort of in our own silos, right? Of, you know, trying to tackle a very complicated industry that is still doing a good job of justifying its existence.
But what about, you know, on a smaller scale, you know, like witnessing animal abuse in the streets, or having an uncomfortable conversation with a family member or with a work colleague? I mean, I also understand the consequences of speaking up, even from a, you know, a small scale.
Yeah, the social,
Yes, going
social
back to that
push.
social
Yeah.
price that you pay, you know, I launched a podcast about animal rights. I say things that most people will not agree with, that some people will even find offensive. But this podcast, I don't hide it. You know, if an employer or a client looks me up online, they will find that I am the host of this podcast, and they can listen to every one of the episodes and how I spoke up against animal abuse. I understand that it's a risk. I understand that I might lose some job opportunities or you know, professional opportunities from doing that. Very much possible. Yet I still do it. You know, I still feel inspired to speak up. I still think it's important, and that the risks are worth, you know, going forward with my opinions and what I and my beliefs and my convictions. Okay, what do you make of that?
I really admire your courage, and I think we just need more people like you. And at some point, we have to be clear to ourselves that we have a limited time in our lives, and how many years of our lives do we want to go about without speaking up, with censoring ourselves? Like, it goes back to what you were saying about at some point we start censoring ourselves, and we are just so worried about being judgmental and being called judgmental. And, you know, I think the entire society doesn't want us to speak up. And their best tool, honestly, I think their best weapon and way that they have to silence us is to make us feel so embarrassed and ashamed of speaking up that we don't speak up at all. And I think that animal oppression is the only form of social justice issues that we are not the victim. And it makes it incredibly hard to speak up because, you know, we are actually the oppressor. We are not the victim. To what you said, I think it's really important for people to, yes, watch the Dominion, the movie, the documentaries, the footage of animal testing. Because when I just ramble about animal testing versus when I actually see that video of a monkey, it's screaming and they're trying to like push like a tube in his nose. Just like, it's a very different thing when you actually see it. And I think the biggest success of these industries have been to hide the truth. So in order to combat that, your best weapon is really just to educate people and show them the truth. And I guarantee you, far fewer people would have supported animal testing if they had to actually see it. If they saw burning mice skin for wound healing experiments, they would have thought very differently from about animal testing than just sitting down here and just say, well, you're against animal testing, so you hate people, you don't. It's not about that, right? Far fewer people would have wanted to consume meat, egg, dairy, leather, fur, all that if they actually had to see it. And I just say this about the power of our words. When I was a graduate student, I was doing activism on my campus, not too consistently, but just one day I was tabling, this guy comes. He was in Marine Corps. He was a part of Future Farmers of America, so he raised pigs for slaughter. In a 5-minute conversation, he decided to go vegan, and I don't take credit. I think he was very ready. He just needed a little push. And he comes back. We become best friends. And longest story short, he ends up doing his PhD in biomedical sciences, develops a drug that he's now building, starting a company over this drug that he created. But he doesn't want to do animal testing. So now he's like researching all these laws. How can he actually take this drug to market without doing animal testing? And eventually, as of literally, I think he's today or this week is his first day working as a scientist in PCRM on alternatives to animal testing. So he went literally from where he was to now dedicating his entire life to this, over me just being there, I don't know, 10 years ago, just saying something. I don't even remember what I said. And that just shows us the power. Like, my entire organization, ASAP, is based on that theory that when you speak up, people change. Especially when you take this to young people who are open-minded and will graduate to become next generation of thought leaders. But aside from that, I think it's on us, because most people are unaware, it's on us to spread the word, to show people the truth, and use our liberty and freedom of speech to bring awareness to this. And don't be too worried about being called judgmental. All we need to do is put ourselves in place of the animals. All we need to do is to think about, if this was happening to a cat or dog or to another human, would we not acting? If a dog was beating up in front of us, would we say, I'm not gonna stop this dog beater, or I'm not gonna stop this child molester because, I'm worried to be judgmental. I'm too worried, you're too worried about being called, militant vegan. Have you heard that? Like they say, like, oh, you're a militant vegan. When I hear that, I feel like somebody like a vegan with AK-47 is like shooting up people trying to stop them from, in reality, the worst possible way is that the vegan said you're an animal abuser if you're eating. The worst part of that could be just like a vegan not sugarcoating what he was trying to say. But these are all the labels that, we are called so that we feel ashamed to speak up, and we can't afford it. If we really want things to change, we need to grow up and sense the urgency and speak up. Can I say something else? The way I look at this is during World War II, obviously, most of the world just didn't know what was happening in concentration camps. And there were a few incidences where people escaped, and then they started telling the rest of the world what was happening, except that nobody believed them. They were in denial. They were like, there is no way that this is happening. They're killing like Jews in this scale. Anyways, because of this, there was like a lot of delay, and so many people died needlessly, because nobody believed them and no one really wanted to talk about it. The way I think about when you have this knowledge of what happens to animals in animal testing, what happens in animal farms, what happens in dairy farms, all that, you become like that person who just escaped a concentration camp. You have this piece of information that nobody knows. And just imagine if you were in place of that guy who just escaped a concentration camp. You feel like everyone comes across your life, you want to tell them what is happening behind these walls. And I think we have that responsibility. So just being vegan is not enough. You are that guy. If you don't speak up, you are the reason that many of these animals are being killed behind these walls. So we have that moral. I don't want to make people feel guilty. I want them to feel like inspired that how much power they have if they just speak up and tell others about the atrocities that are so normalized. So we have that responsibility.
Madeline, did you want
Yeah.
to Madeline, did you want to comment, add something to what Dr. Ferraz said?
I consistently appreciate Dr. Faraz's like tirelessness throughout all of this. I think I tend to be the person that sort of like, yes, definitely like use your voice, and also I understand like the that some people like the risks are higher for others, like for some than others when it comes to speaking out. And so I do like to acknowledge that, like, it's, I don't know, like in some ways I want to just say like, yes, like just speak out, just do it, you need to do it. And then I also understand like the ramifications, and is this what I want to result in it, or like the result to be like, if I just, if I work in a lab and I'm really starting to feel like I need to speak out about this, am I ready to be fired? Is that, do I feel like that's going to be like the successful end, because that's probably what's going to come? Or is there anything else I might be able to do? Like, so I guess I just like think about things a little more. And other people, it's like speaking out can mean not having a job and literally not having money and needing to take care of their families and stuff. And again, so like there's a lot of people out there who are in great positions to speak out. So I guess my point is just like it is okay if you need to sort of like evaluate how you go about like speaking? Is it more in like these smaller conversations, or is it like, you become this public figure with all eyes on you? And also, I would say too, with personal relationships, I know a lot of people are like, they struggle with family or with like close friends. Like they might go vegan and then it's like, oh my God, like I now am awake to all of this and I don't know how to deal with my family who just doesn't get it, that kind of thing. And I guess what I would want to offer there, I mean, I'm pretty fortunate that like my mom has always just been like so supportive of me. And so she just kind of like was like, what is going through your brain? And started reading, and then eventually went like vegan at 60 something because she was just like, I can't, this makes sense. And then, it was just sort of this like snowball effect. But there are some cases where I think like, give yourself some time with certain relationships. People don't always change overnight. It would be great if everyone changed overnight, but try to still be compassionate towards others when you are advocating, because I don't know. I mean, I know there's like controversy. Like some people will say like, shame does cause change. Shame doesn't cause change. Personally, like if I'm feeling attacked, if I'm feeling shamed, it doesn't inspire me to want to do something. I'm not saying that you still have to be honest about what's going on. And I think Dr. Faraz is great about that. It's like, this is the reality. But I also, the empowering people is really, really important throughout all of this, and building a community that you feel can help you continue to speak out, because it's a lot. I mean, that's what Justify is, this organization again that I created, and I don't think I've even mentioned it completely, but basically the idea behind Justify is I'm trying to empower other former and even current animal lab workers to share their stories from the industry, to really start to get more of this secrecy, or I guess combat the secrecy of this industry, and help people who may be questioning or like already questioned and left the industry and were never going to talk about it, but now are like, oh, there's other people talking about it. Maybe I now feel comfortable talking about it. Like there is power in numbers, there is power in community. And so as much as we want like to empower people like to speak out, I think making sure that they know they also have these people that they can turn to as they continue speaking out, or just kind of like learning how to use their voice, so to speak, is really important.
Yeah, thanks for reminding me to clarify. Always when I say get active, speak up, I don't mean that don't be strategic about it, and it doesn't mean the same thing. I don't think that everyone should necessarily publicly even talk about veganism. If your job, it's really case by case, right? So you know that you are in a position that you could just get another job. But if you are really in a position where if you say that you're vegan, you're going to get fired. But using your position, though, you're going to give it your 100% to strategically, without mentioning veganism, push for what you actually believe to be right, then you do what you have to do. Someone said, I knew that if I continue doing the animal testing, then I was able to, or don't make a noise, then I can get my vet degree, and as a vet, then I can actually go and, the credibility that that will give me, outweighs anything else. Then I can like do it. But if you do it, I also have students who tell me, "Oh, I don't have a choice." Of course you do. You always, everything you do, you have a choice. So yeah, of course, maybe that professor will, fire you, but it's not gonna be end of the day. End of the world. You just find another lab, right? So it's just uncomfortable. So you are continuing doing it because you are telling yourself, if I don't do it, someone else will. But you could say that also killing people in the concentration camp, that if I don't do that, someone else will. But we don't justify it when it comes to humans, right? So what is the underlying reason that we are not doing it? Is it really us wanting the best for the animals and being strategic about it, because then that would be justified? Or is it just we feel like shy or not empowered? And I do want people to feel like they have that power, because when you speak up, when you change, you get to change other people, just the same way that Maddie is now empowering a lot of other people. So what you do is completely different. I'm not prescribing any specific way for people to get active. Being active, I keep telling people that they need to be active, but I don't mean that everyone should go on the street and hold a TV. I'm saying that use anything in your power, whether it's donation, your resources, your time, just think about it. Think about it as a moral urgency, right?
Another way of thinking about freedom of speech is, your right of hearing, reading, watching, whatever you want. What if there was no freedom of speech for animal rights activists? Then would I have been vegan? That's something you can ask yourself. So, what if something happens to you akin to what both of you have experienced, whether online, on social media, or in a protest with policemen dangling hand what's that?
Handcuffs.
Handcuffs, sorry. Where do you go to? Who do you call? Who is the freedom of speech police to report this this violation of your rights? Any advice on that?
I think Maddie has more experience on that, but I would probably just talk to animal lawyers and free speech lawyer. Our case was different because it wasn't actually necessarily an animal rights case. For lawyers, at least, for me, it is an animal rights case, but for the lawyers, it's a freedom of speech case. So I guess you either have to find this organization, chat with lawyers, and yeah, that's all I can think of.
Yeah, I think reaching out to lawyers, and I mean, assuming this is animal rights related, animal lawyers are definitely a good place to go. I mean, the Animal Legal Defense Fund is who has represented me on both my cases. There are definitely other groups doing this work too. And that fire is it fire? Yeah, because I think they wrote actually an amicus brief for my Wisconsin case. They're like a good resource. I mean, I think part of it too is understanding what your rights are with free speech. Because again, I didn't even know that what I was doing, like that this was going to turn into a free speech case. I was just like, they're clearly targeting me and not wanting me to say something, but I wasn't make like jumping to this because I didn't even have an understanding of free speech. I mean, I think there's a lot wrong with our educational system, and that's probably part of it. If you have questions and stuff too, again, reaching out to these individuals. So not only trying to like educate yourself on what is what it means, but knowing that you can reach out and ask people, including me and Dr. Faraz, like if something comes up and you're like, who would you go to? I'm sure both of us would be happy to provide any sort of insight we might have.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. After working with FHIR, now every time I'm getting a letter from university saying that you can't say that, I always like go to FHIR. I'm like, can they actually say this? And it's really tricky. It's not even for lawyers. Sometimes they can't tell you yes or no. They say, it's a private university, so technically whatever. But there is a case if they specifically say that or whatever. So it's not as straightforward as you think it might be. And but I would say always question if somebody is telling you can't say what you just said. At least explore the. I just give one quick other example. Like PCRM is another favorite organization of mine that does some of these cases. There was a high school kid who was told she wasn't allowed to hand out literature about against dairy industry, and the school said you're not allowed to do that, and so they were able to sue the high school or whoever it was over that. There was another teacher who said posted something on their social media, and he got fired over that because he criticized like dairy on his private Facebook page. And I think PCRM or somewhere else also helped them fight that case, and he won, got hired back, I think. But there are so many examples of this. So if you're not sure, always just ask.
Yeah, because it's not always straightforward. I mean, even I returned to my alma mater a couple months ago, back in October, to table and basically talk to students alongside actually one of the ASAP chapters, so the Wisconsin ASAP chapter. And Wisconsin has really been kind of putting out a lot of free speech messaging and trying to sort of I guess be aligned to the First Amendment. Whether or not that is really taking place is can be up for debate. But when I was looking at some of like the like at the rules for where you can be on campus, tabling and like who can be there, even though this is a public university and it's taxpayer funded, there's all these rules about where you can be on campus, at what time, how you can be there. And to me, I'm like, is this like allowed? Like, is this actually okay? Would this hold up? Because if you're a first, if the, or sorry, if you're a publicly funded institution, do you actually get to control who's here, at this time? Like I know there's you have written out that you do, and so it's very, and I don't actually know the answer to it to this to this day, and it's just, I think it's like purposefully confusing, and it's purpose it's I think the point is to kind of deter you from trying something that you might actually be allowed to do. I'm not saying like go break a bunch of rules, but like if something seems questionable, there's no reason why you can't reach out to lawyers who might be able to help you and give you some advice as to like, is this actually okay? Can I be here or not?
I would say one thing that for listeners, it's a huge red flag, which means that you should probably pursue this, is if they apply the rules differently to you and if they discriminate, because that's definitely a red flag. Oftentimes, even public places, they have time, place, and manner restrictions, but they're okay, but they can be applied, uniformly. On everyone. But if they're letting someone else, table, but they're not letting you table with the same condition at the same time, at the same place, and you're not doing anything that breaks the law, then that's definitely a red flag. So always look for that.
Yeah, agree.
Wonderful. And of course, I will provide links to various nonprofits in the episode notes, such as FIRE or the Animal Legal Fund. Dr. Faraz, Maddie, thank you so much for having taken the time to talk with me and raise awareness on this very important issue. I truly appreciate that, and I truly appreciate your work as activist and what you have done on the front of free speech. Very impressive. You did not fold. You were not scared of the intimidation tactics. You kept on the fight. So thank you for that.
My pleasure, and thanks. First of all, Maddie, I know you get like a lot of backlash for just voicing your concern and just speaking up and all the name callings and all that. So it takes a certain person to be able to resist. So thank you for that, and for you as well, because you could do something else with your free time, but you just decided to start a podcast, right? To raise awareness about animals. And that's all I'm asking. You could do anything else, but you decided to do this because it's important to you. And I think animal rights, people who talk about animals, this just really brings the most selfless people. Not only you don't get to use it as virtue signaling, but also like you potentially lose friends over it just because you're speaking the truth and you're defending the most helpless. So thank you both of you for doing what you do.
Thank you everyone for listening. I kindly invite you to share this podcast with the vegans you know. Let's encourage more people to take action. Again, thank you so much for caring, and I will see you next Tuesday for a new episode.